Why try to make me nervous? Said Monkey. Look! The painted and carven balustrades are scattered and strewn. The jewel-studded arbors and trees are toppling down. The sedgy islands and knotweed banks are buried in dust. The white peonies and yellow glove flowers all dust-destroyed. Jasmine and rose perfume the night. The red peony and tiger lily bloom in vain. The hibiscus and Syrian mallow are choked with weeds. Strange plant and rare flower are crushed and die.
And what does it matter if they do? Said Pixie. Let's get on with our business.
Monkey, although deeply affected by the scene, called to mind Tripitaka's dream, in which he was told that the well was underneath a banana plant, and when they had gone a little further, they did indeed discover a most singular banana plant, which grew very thick and high. Now, Pigsy, said Monkey, are you ready? The treasure is buried under this tree. That fool lifted his rake in both hands, beat down the banana tree, and began to nuzzle with his snout till he had made a hole 3 or 4 feet deep. At last he came to a slab of stone.
Brother,
he cried,
here's luck. We've found the treasure. It's bound to be under this slab. If it's not in a coffer, it will be in a jar.
Hoist it up and see,
said Monkey. Pigsy went to work again with his snout and raised the slab till they could see underneath. Something sparkled and flashed.
Didn't I say we were in luck?
Said Pigsy.
That is the treasure glittering.
But when they looked closer, it was the light of the stars and moon reflected in a well.
Brother,
said Pigsy,
you should not think so much of the trunk that you forget the root.
Now, what does that mean?
Asked Monkey.
This is a well, said Pigsy. If you had told me before we started that the treasure was in a well, I should have brought with me the 2 ropes we tie up our bundles with, and you could have contrived to let me down. As it is, how are we going to get at anything down there and bring it up again?
You intend to go down?
Said Monkey.
That is what I should do, said Pigsy, if I had any rope.
Take off your clothes, said Monkey, and I'll manage it for you.
I don't go in for much in the way of clothes,
said Pigsy,
but I'll take off my jerkin, if that's any good.
Dear Monkey, he took out his metal-clasped cudgel, called to it, stretch, and when it was some 30 feet long, he said to Pigsy,
you catch hold of one end, and I'll let you down.
Brother,
said Pigsy,
let me down as far as you like, so long as you stop when I come to the water.
Just so,
said Monkey. Pigsy caught hold of one end of the staff and was very gently raised and let down into the well by Monkey. He soon reached the water.
I'm at the water,
he called up. Monkey, hearing this, let him down just a little further. That fool, Pigsy, when he felt the water touch him, began to beat out with his trotters, let go of the staff, and flopped right into the water.
You rascal!
He cried, spluttering and blowing.
I told him to stop when I came to the water, and instead he let me down further.
Monkey only laughed and withdrew the staff.
Brother, he said, have you found the treasure?
Treasure, indeed,
said Pigsy.
There's nothing but well water.
The treasure is under the water,
said Monkey.
Just have a look.
Pigsy, it so happened, was thoroughly at home in the water. He took a great plunge straight down into the well, but oh, what a long way it was to the bottom. He dived again with all his might, and suddenly opening his eyes, saw in front of him an entrance above which was written, The Crystal Palace. This astonished him very much.
That finishes it,
he cried.
I've come the wrong way and got into the sea. There is a Crystal Palace in the sea, but I never heard of one down a well.
for he did not know that the Dragon King of the Well also has a crystal palace. Pigsy was thus debating with himself when a yaksha on patrol duty in the waters opened the door, saw the intruder, and immediately withdrew to the interior, announcing,
"Great King, a calamity! A long-snouted, long-eared priest has dropped down into our well, all naked and dripping. He is still alive and speaks to himself rationally."
The Dragon King of the Well was, however, not at all surprised.
"If I am not mistaken," he said, "this is General Pigsy. Last night, the spirit that wanders by night received orders to come here and fetch the soul of the King of Crow Cock and bring it to the priest of Tiang to ask the monkey sage to subdue the wicked magician. I imagine that Monkey has come as well as General Pigsy. They must be treated with great consideration. Go at once and ask the general to come in."
The Dragon King then tidied his clothes, adjusted his hat, and bringing with him all his watery kinsmen, he came to the gate and cried in a loud voice,
"General Pigsy, pray come inside and be seated."
Pigsy was delighted.
"Fancy meeting with an old friend," he said.
And without thinking what he was in for, that fool went into the Crystal Palace. Caring nothing for good manners, all dripping as he was, he sat down in the seat of honour.
"General," said the Dragon King, "I heard lately that your life was spared to you on condition you should embrace the faith of Sakyamuni and protect Tripitaka on his journey to India. What, then, are you doing down here?"
"It's just in that connection that I come," said Pigsy. "My brother Monkey presents his best compliments and sends me to fetch some treasure or other."
"I am sorry," said the Dragon King, "but what should I be doing with any treasure? You're mixing me up with the dragons of the Yangtze, the Yellow River, the Huai, and the Chai, who soar about the sky and assume many shapes. They no doubt have treasures, but I stay down here all the time in this wretched hold, never catching a glimpse of the sky above. Where should I get a treasure from?"
"Don't make excuses," said Pigsy. "I know you have got it, so bring it out at once."
"The one treasure I have," said the Dragon King, "can't be brought out. I suggest you should go and look at it for yourself."
"Excellent," said Pigsy. "I'll come and have a look."
The Dragon King led him through the Crystal Palace till they came to a cloister in which lay a body 6 feet long. Pointing at it, the Dragon King said,
"General, there is your treasure."
Pigsy went up to it, and oh, what did he see before him? It was a dead emperor, on his head a tall crown, dressed in a red gown, on his feet upturned shoes girded with a belt of jades, who lay stretched full length upon the floor. Pigsy laughed.
"You won't kid me like that," he said. "Since when did this count as treasure? Why, when I was an ogre in the mountains, I made my supper on them every day. When one has not only seen such a thing time after time, but also eaten it again and again, can one be expected to regard it as a treasure?"
"General,"
said the Dragon King,
"you do not understand. This is the body of the King of Crow Cock. When he fell into the well, I preserved him with a magic pearl, and he suffered no decay. If you care to take him up with you, show him to Monkey, and succeed in bringing him back to his senses, you need worry no more about treasures. You will be able to get anything out of him that you choose to ask for."
"Very well, then," said Pigsy. "I'll remove him for you if you'll let me know how much I shall get as my undertaker's fee."
"I haven't got any money,"
said the Dragon King.
So you expect to get jobs done for nothing, said Pigsy. If you haven't got any money, I won't remove him.
If you won't, said the Dragon King, I must ask you to go away.
Pigsy at once retired. The Dragon King ordered two powerful yakshas to carry the body to the gate of the Crystal Palace and leave it just outside. They removed from the gate its water-fending pearls, and at once there was a sound of rushing waters. Pigsy looked round. The gate had vanished, and while he was poking about for it, his hand touched the dead king's body, which gave him such a start that his legs gave way under him. He scrambled to the surface of the water, and squeezing against the well wall, he cried,
"Brother, let down your staff and get me out of this!"
"Did you find the treasure?"
asked Monkey.
"How should I?" said Pigsy. "All I found was a Dragon King at the bottom of the water who wanted me to remove a corpse. I refused, and he had me put out at the door. Then his palace vanished, and I found myself touching the corpse. It gave me such a turn that I felt quite weak. Brother, you must get me out of this."
"That was your treasure," said Monkey. "Why didn't you bring it up with you?"
"I knew he had been dead a long time," said Pigsy. "What was the sense of bringing him?"
"You'd better," said Monkey, "or I shall go away."
"Go?"
said Pigsy.
"Where to?"
"I shall go back to the temple," said Monkey, "and go to sleep, like Tripitaka."
"And I should be left down here?"
said Pigsy.
"If you can climb out," said Monkey, "there is no reason why you should stay here. But if you can't, there's an end of it."
Pigsy was thoroughly frightened. He knew he could not possibly climb out.
"Just think," he said. "Even a city wall is difficult to get up, but this well shaft has a big belly and a small mouth. Its walls slope in, and as no water has been drawn from it for several years, they have all become covered with slime. It's far too slippery to climb. Brother, just to keep up a nice spirit between friends, I'll carry it up."
"That's right," said Monkey, "and be quick about it, so that we can both of us go home to bed."
That fool Pigsy dived down again, found the corpse, hoisted it onto his back, clambered up to the surface of the water, and propped himself and the body against the wall.
"Brother," he called, "I've brought it."
Monkey peered down, and seeing that Pigsy had indeed a burden on his back, he lowered his staff into the well. That fool was a creature of much determination. He opened his mouth wide, bit hard on the staff, and Monkey pulled him gently up. Putting down the corpse, Pigsy pulled himself into his clothes. The Emperor, Monkey found on examining, was indeed in the most perfect preservation.
"Brother," said Pigsy, "how comes it that a man who has been dead for 3 years can look so fresh? According to the Dragon King of the Well, he used a magic pearl which prevented the body from decaying."
"That was a bit of luck," said Monkey, "but it still remains to take vengeance upon his enemy and win glory for ourselves. Make haste and carry him off."
"Where to?"
asked Pigsy.
"To the temple," said Monkey, "to show him to Tripitaka."
"What an idea,"
grumbled Pigsy to himself.
"A fellow is having a nice sound sleep, and along comes this baboon with a wonderful yarn about a job that must be done, and in the end it turns out to be nothing but this silly game of carting about a corpse. Carry that stinking thing, it will dribble filthy water all over me and dirty my clothes. There's no one to wash them for me. There are patches in several places, and if the water gets through, I have nothing to change into."
"Don't worry about your clothes," said Monkey. "Get the body to the temple, and I will give you a change of clothes."
"Impudence," cried Pigsy. "You've none of your own. How can you give me any to change into?"
"Does that twaddle mean that you won't carry it?" asked Monkey.
"I am not going to carry it,"
said Pigsy.
"Then hold out your paw and take 20,
said Monkey.
"Brother,"
said Pigsy, much alarmed,
"that cudgel is very heavy. After 20 strokes of it, there would not be much to choose between me and this emperor."
"If you don't want to be beaten," said Monkey, "make haste and carry it off."
Pigsy did indeed fear the cudgel, and sorely against his will, he hoisted the corpse onto his back and began to drag himself along towards the garden gate. Dear Monkey, he performed a magic pass, recited a spell, traced a magic square on the ground, and going to it, blew a breath that turned into a great gust of wind which blew Pigsy clean out of the palace grounds and clear of the city moat. The wind stopped, and alighting, they set out slowly on their way. Pigsy was feeling very ill-used, and thought of a plan to revenge himself.
"This Monkey," he said to himself, "has played a dirty trick on me, but I'll get even with him all right when we get back to the temple. I will tell Tripitaka that Monkey can bring the dead to life. If he says he can't, I shall persuade Tripitaka to recite the spell that makes this monkey's head ache, and I shan't be satisfied till his brains are bursting out of his head."
But thinking about it as he went along, he said to himself,
"That's no good. If he is asked to bring the king to life, he won't have any difficulty. He will go straight to Yama, king of death, ask for the soul, and so bring the king to life. I must make it clear that he is not to go to the dark realm, but must do his cure here in the world of light. That's the thing to do."
They were now at the temple gate, went straight in and put down the corpse at the door of the Zen Hall, saying,
"Master, get up and look."
Tripitaka was not asleep, but was discussing with Sandy why the others were away so long. Suddenly he heard them calling, and jumping up, he said,
"Disciples, what is this I see?"
"Monkey's father-in-law," said Pigsy. "He made me carry him."
"You rotten fool," said Monkey. "Where have I any father-in-law?"
"Brother, if he isn't your father-in-law," said Pigsy, "why did you make me carry him? It has been tiring work for me, I can tell you that."
When Tripitaka and Sandy examined the body and saw that the emperor looked just like a live man, Tripitaka suddenly burst into lamentation.
"Alas, poor emperor," he cried. "In some forgotten existence you doubtless did great wrong to one that in this incarnation has now confounded you and brought you to destruction. You were torn from wife and child. None of your generals or counselors knew. None of your officers were aware. Alas, for this blindness of your queen and prince that offered no incense, no tea to your soul."
Here he broke down, and his tears fell like rain.
"Master," said Pigsy, "what does it matter to you that he is dead? He's not your father or grandfather. Why should you wail over him?"
"Disciple," said Tripitaka, "for us who are followers of Buddha, compassion is the root, indulgence the gate. Why is your heart so hard?"
"It isn't that my heart is hard," said Pigsy, "but Brother Monkey tells me he can bring him to life. If he fails, I am certainly not going to cart him about any more."
Now Tripitaka, being by nature pliable as water, was easily moved by that fool's story.
"Monkey," he said, "if you can indeed bring this emperor back to life, you will be doing what matters more than that we should reach the holy mountain and worship the Buddha. They say to save one life is better than to build a seven-storied pagoda."
"Master," said Monkey, "do you really believe this fool's wild talk? When a man is dead, in 3 times 7, 5 times 7, or at the end of 700 days, when he has done penance for his sins in the world of light, his turn comes to be born again. This king has been dead for 3 years. How can he possibly be saved?"
"I expect we had better give up the idea," said Tripitaka when he heard this.
But Pigsy was not to be cheated of his revenge.
"Don't let him put you off," he said to Tripitaka. "Remember, his head is very susceptible. You have only to recite that stuff of yours, and I'll guarantee that he'll turn the king into a live man."
Tripitaka accordingly did recite the headache spell, and it gripped so tight that Monkey's eyes started out of his head, and he suffered frightful pain. If you do not know whether in the end this king was brought to life, you must listen to what is unfolded in the next chapter. The pain in that great monkey sage's head was so severe that at last he could bear it no longer and cried piteously,
"Master, stop praying, stop praying. I'll doctor him."
"How will you do it?" asked Tripitaka.
"The only way is to visit Yama, King of Death, in the Land of Darkness, and get him to let me have the king's soul," said Monkey.
"Don't believe him, Master," said Pigsy. "He told me there was no need to go to the Land of Darkness. He said he knew how to cure him here and now in the World of Light."
Tripitaka believed this wicked lie and began praying again, and Monkey was so harassed that he soon gave in.
All right," he cried. "I'll cure him in the World of Light."
"Don't stop," said Pigsy. "Go on praying as hard as you can."
"You ill-begotten idiot," cursed Monkey. "I'll pay you out for making the master put a spell upon me."
Pigsy laughed till he fell over.
"Ho, ho, brother," he cried. "You thought it was only on me that tricks could be played. You didn't think that I could play a trick on you."
"Master, stop praying," said Monkey, "and let me cure him in the World of Light."
"How can that be done?" asked Tripitaka.
"I will rise on my cloud trapeze," said Monkey, "and force my way into the southern gate of heaven. I shall not go to the palace of the pole and ox, nor to the hall of holy mists, but go straight up to the 33rd heaven, and in the Triasimstra courtyard of the heavenly palace of Quit Grief, I shall visit Leo Tzu and ask for a grain of his 9 times sublimated life-restoring elixir, and with it I shall bring the king back to life."
This suggestion pleased Tripitaka very much.
"Lose no time about it," he said. "It is only the third watch," said Monkey. "I shall be back before it is light. But it would look all wrong if the rest of you went quietly to sleep. It is only decent that someone should watch by the corpse and mourn."
"You need say no more," said Pigsy. "I can see that you expect me to act as mourner."
"I should like to see you refuse," said Monkey. "If you don't act as mourner, I certainly shan't bring him back to life."
"Be off, brother," said Pigsy, "and I'll do the mourning."
"There are more ways than one of mourning," said Monkey. "Mere bellowing with dry eyes is no good, nor is it any better just to squeeze out a few tears. What counts is a good hearty howling, with tears as well. That is wanted for a real miserable mourning."
"I'll give you a specimen," said Pigsy.
He then, from somewhere or other, produced a piece of paper, which he twisted into a paper spill and thrust up his nostrils. This soon set him snivelling and his eyes running, and when he began to howl, he kept up such a din that anyone would have thought he had indeed lost his dearest relative. The effect was so mournful that Tripitaka, too, soon began to weep bitterly.
"That's what you've got to keep up the whole time I'm away,"
said Monkey, laughing.
"What I'm frightened of is that this fool, the moment my back is turned, will stop wailing. I shall creep back and listen, and if he shows any sign of leaving off, he will get 20 on the paw."
"Be off with you," laughed Pigsy. "I could easily keep this up for 2 days on end."
Sandy, seeing that Pigsy had settled down to his job, went off to look for some sticks of incense to burn as an offering.
"Excellent,"
laughed Monkey.
"The whole family is engaged in works of piety. Now's the time for old Monkey to get to business."
Dear Monkey, just at midnight he left his teacher and fellow disciples, mounted his cloud trapeze, and flew in at the southern gate of heaven. He did not indeed call at the precious hall of holy mists, or go on to the palace of pole and ox, but only along a path of cloudy light went straight to the 33rd heaven, to the triosimstra courtyard of the heavenly palace of Quit Grief. Just inside the gate he saw Lao Tzu in his alchemical studio with a number of fairy boys holding banana leaf fans and fanning the fire in which the cinnabar was sublimating. As soon as Lao Tzu saw him coming, he called to the boys,
"Be careful, all of you. Here's the thief who stole the elixir. Come back again."
Monkey bowed and said, laughing,
"Reverend sir, there is no need to be in such a fret. You need take no precautions against me. I have come on quite different business."
"Monkey," said Lao Tzu, 500 years ago, you made great trouble in the Palace of Heaven and stole a great quantity of my holy elixir, for which crime you were arrested and placed in my crucible, where you were smelted for 49 days, at the cost of I know not how much charcoal. Now you have been lucky enough to obtain forgiveness into the service of Buddha and go with Tripitaka, the priest of Tiang, to get scriptures in India. Some while ago, you quelled a demon in the flat-topped mountain and tricked disaster, but did not give me my share in the treasure. What brings you here today?"
"In those old days," said Monkey, "I lost no time in returning to you those 5 treasures of yours. You had no reason to be suspicious of me."
"But what are you doing here?" asked Lao Tzu, "creeping into my palace instead of getting on with your journey."
"On our way to the west," said Monkey, "we came to a country called Crow Cock. The king of the country employed a wizard who had disguised himself as a Taoist to bring rain. This wizard secretly did away with the king, whose form he assumed, and now he is ensconced in the Hall of Golden Bells. My master was reading the scriptures in the Treasure Wood Temple when the soul of the king came to him and earnestly requested that I might be sent to subdue the wizard and expose his imposture. I felt I had no proof of the crime, and went with my fellow disciple Pigsy. We broke into the flower garden by night and looked for the crystal well into which the king had been thrown. We fished him up and found him still sound and fresh. When we got back to the temple and saw Tripitaka, his compassion was aroused, and he ordered me to bring the king to life. But I was not to go down to the world of darkness to recover his soul. I must cure him here in the world of light. I could think of no way but to ask for your help. Would you be so kind as to lend me 1,000 of your 9 times sublimated life-restoring pills? Then I shall be able to set him right."
1,000 pills, indeed!" exclaimed Lao Tzu. "Why not 2,000? Is he to have them at every meal instead of rice? Do you think one only has to stoop and pick them up like dirt from the ground? Shoo! Be off with you. I have nothing for you."
"I take 100,
said Monkey, laughing.
"I dare say," said Lao Tzu, "but I haven't any."
"I'd take 10,
said Monkey.
"A curse on this monkey,"
said Lao Tzu, very angry.
"Will he never stop haggling? Be off with you, immediately."
"If you really haven't got any," said Monkey, "I shall have to find some other way of bringing him to life."
"Go, go, go,"
screamed Lao Tzu. Very reluctantly Monkey turned away, but suddenly Lao Tzu thought to himself,
"This monkey is very crafty. If he really went away and stayed away, it would be all right, but I'm afraid he will slip back again and steal some."
So he sent a fairy boy to bring Monkey back and said to him,
"If you really are so anxious to have some, I'll spare you just 1 pill.
"Sir,"
said Monkey. If you had an inkling of what I can do if I choose, you would think yourself lucky to go shares in it with me. If you hadn't given in, I should have come with my dredge and fished up the whole lot.
Liao Tzu took a gourd-shaped pot and, tilting it up, emptied one grain of elixir and passed it across to Monkey, saying,
That's all you'll get, so be off with it. And if, with this one grain, you can bring the king back to life, you are welcome to the credit of it.
Not so fast, said Monkey. I must taste it first. I don't want to be put off with a sham. So saying, he tossed it into his mouth. Liao Tzu rushed forward to stop him, and pressing his fists against his skull cap, he cried in despair,
If you swallow it, I shall kill you on the spot.
Revolting meanness, said Monkey. Keep calm. No one is going to eat anything of yours, and how much is it worth, anyhow? It's pretty wretched stuff, and come to that, I haven't swallowed it. It's here.
For the fact is that monkeys have a pouch under the gullet, and Monkey had stored the grain of elixir in his pouch. Liao Tzu pinched him and said,
Be off with you, be off with you, and don't let me find you hanging around here any more.
So Monkey took leave of him and quitted the Triasimstra heaven. In a moment he had left by the southern gate, and turning eastward he saw the great globe of the sun just mounting. Lowering his cloud seat, he soon reached the Treasure Wood Temple, where, even before he had entered the gate, he could hear Pigsy still howling. He stepped briskly forward and cried,
Master! Is that Monkey?
Cried Trivitaka delightedly.
Have you got your elixir?
Certainly, said Monkey.
What's the use of asking?
Said Pigsy.
You can count on a sneak like that to bring back some trifle that doesn't belong to him.
Brother, laughed Monkey, you can retire. We don't need you any more. Wipe your eyes, and if you want to do more howling, do it elsewhere. And you, Sandy, bring me a little water.
Sandy hurried out to the well behind the temple, where there was a bucket of water ready drawn. He dipped his bowl into it and brought half a bowl full of water. Monkey filled his mouth with water, and then spat out the elixir into the emperor's lips. Next, he forced open his jaws, and pouring in some clean water, he floated the elixir down into his belly. In a few moments, there was a gurgling sound inside, but the body still did not move.
Master, said Monkey, what will become of me if my elixir fails? Shall I be beaten to death?
I don't see how it can fail, said Tripitaka. It's already a miracle that a corpse that has been dead so long can swallow water. After the elixir entered his belly, we heard the guts ring. When the guts ring, the veins move in harmony. It only remains to get the breath into circulation. But even a piece of iron gets a bit rusty when it has been under water for 3 years. It is only natural that something of the same kind should happen to a man. All that's wrong with him is that he needs a supply of breath. If someone puts a mouthful of good breath into him, he would be quite himself again.
Pigsy at once offered himself for this service, but Tripitaka held him back.
You're no use for that, he cried. Let Monkey do it.
Tripitaka knew what he was talking about, for Pigsy had, in his early days, eaten living things, and even monstrously devoured human flesh, so that all his stock of breath was defiled, whereas Monkey had always lived on pine seeds, cypress cones, peaches, and the like, and his breath was pure. So Monkey stepped forward, and putting his wide mouth against the emperor's lips, he blew hard into his throat. The breath went down to the two-storied tower, round the hall of light, on to the cinnabar field, and from the jetting spring went back again into the mud-wall palace, whereupon there was a deep panting sound. The king's humours concentrated, his spirits returned. He rolled over, brandished his fist, and bent his legs. Then with a cry, Master! He knelt down in the dust and said,
Little did I think, when my soul visited you last night, that today at dawn I should again belong to the world of light.
Tripitaka quickly raised him from his knees and said, Your Majesty, this is no doing of mine. You must thank my disciple.
What talk is that?
Said Monkey, laughing.
The proverb says, A household cannot have two masters.
There is no harm in letting him pay his respects to you.
Tripitaka, still feeling somewhat embarrassed, raised the emperor to his feet and brought him to the hall of meditation, where he and his disciples again prostrated themselves and set him on a seat. The priests of the temple had got ready their breakfast and invited Tripitaka and his party to join them. Imagine their astonishment when they saw an emperor, his clothes still dripping.
Don't be surprised,
said Monkey, coming forward.
This is the king of Crow Cock, your rightful lord. 3 years ago, he was robbed of his life by a fiend, and tonight I brought him back to life. Now we must take him to the city and expose the impostor. If you have anything for us to eat, serve it now, and we will start as soon as we have breakfasted.
The priest brought the emperor hot water to wash in and helped him out of his clothes. The almoner bought him a cloth jacket, and instead of his jade belt, tied a silk sash round his waist, took off his upturned shoes, and gave him a pair of old priest's sandals. Then they all had breakfast and saddled the horse.
Pigsy, is your luggage very heavy?
Asked Monkey.
Brother, I've carried it so many days on end that I don't know whether it's heavy or not.
Divide the pack into two, said Monkey. Take one half yourself and give the other to this emperor to carry. In that way, we shall get quicker to the city and dispose of our business.
That's a bit of luck, said Pigsy. It was a nuisance getting him here, but now that he's been made alive, he is coming in useful as a partner.
Pigsy then divided the luggage after his own methods. Borrowing a hod from the priests of the temple, he put everything light into his own load and everything heavy into the king's.
I hope your majesty has no objection, said Monkey, laughing, to being dressed up like this and carrying the luggage and following us on foot.
Master, said the emperor, instantly flinging himself upon his knees, I can only regard you as my second progenitor, and let alone carrying luggage for you, my heartfelt desire is to go with you all the way to India, even if I were only to serve you as the lowest menial, running beside you, whip in hand as you ride.
There is no need for you to go to India, said Monkey. That's our special concern. All you have to do is carry the luggage 40 leagues to the city, and then let us seize the fiend, after which you can go on being emperor again, and we can go on looking for scriptures.
That's all very well, said Pigsy, but in that case he gets off with 40 leagues, while I shall be on the job all the time.
Brother, said Monkey, don't talk nonsense, but be quick and lead the way out.
Pigsy and the emperor accordingly led the way, while Sandy supported Tripitaka on his horse, and Monkey followed behind. They were accompanied to the gates by 500 priests in gorgeous procession, blowing conches as they walked.
Don't come with us any further, said Monkey. If some official were to notice, our plans might get out, and everything would go wrong. Go back at once and have the emperor's clothes well cleaned and send them to the city tonight or early tomorrow. I will see to it that you are well paid for your pains.
They had not travelled for half a day when the walls and moat of the city of Crow Cock came into view.
Monkey, said Tripitaka, I think this place in front of us must be the city of Crow Cock. It certainly is, said Monkey. Let us hurry on and do our business.
When they reached the city, they found the streets and markets thronging with people, and everywhere a great stir and bustle. Soon they saw rising before them towers and gables of great magnificence.
Disciples, said Tripitaka, let us go at once to court and get our papers in order. Then we shall have no more trouble hanging about in government offices. That is a good idea, said Monkey. We will all come with you. The more the tellers, the better the story.
Well, if you all come, said Tripitaka. "You must behave nicely, and not say anything till you have done homage as humble subjects of the throne."
"But that means bowing down,"
said Monkey. "To be sure," said Tripitaka. "You have to bow down 5 times and strike your forehead on the ground 3 times.
"Master," said Monkey, "that's not a good idea. To pay homage to a thing like that is really too silly. Let me go in first, and I will decide what we are to do. If he addresses us, let me answer him. If you see me bow, then you must bow too. If I squat, then you must squat."
Look at him, that Monkey King, maker of many troubles, how he goes straight up to the door and says to the high officer in charge,
"We were sent by the Emperor of China to worship Buddha in India and fetch scriptures. We want to have our papers put in order here, and will trouble you to announce our arrival. By doing so, you will not fail to gain religious merit."
The eunuch went in and knelt on the steps of the throne, announcing the visitors and their request.
"I did not think it right to let them straight in," he said. "They await your orders outside the door."
The false king then summoned them in. Tripitaka entered, accompanied by the true king, who, as he went, could not stop the tears that coursed down his cheeks.
"Alas," he sighed to himself, "for my dragon-guarded rivers and hills, my iron-girt shrines, who would have guessed that a creature of darkness would possess you all?"
"Emperor," said Monkey, "you must control your emotion, or we shall be discovered. I can feel the truncheon behind my ear twitching, and I am certain that I shall be successful. Leave it to me to slay the monster, and when things are cleaned up, those rivers and hills will soon be yours again."
The true king dared not demur. He wiped away his tears and followed as best he could. At last they reached the Hall of Golden Bells, where they saw the 2 rows of officials, civil and military, and the 400 court officers, all of imposing stature and magnificently apparelled. Monkey led Tripitaka forward to the white jade steps, where they both stood motionless and erect. The officials were in consternation.
"Are these priests so utterly bereft of decency and reason?"
they exclaimed.
"How comes it that seeing our king, they do not bow down or greet him with any word of blessing? Not even a cry of salutation escaped their lips. Never have we seen such impudent lack of manners."
"Where do they come from?"
interrupted the false king.
"We were sent from the eastern land of Tiang, in southern Jambadvipa,"
said Monkey haughtily,
"by royal command to go to India, that is, in the western region, and there to worship the living Buddha in the temple of the great thunderclap and obtain true scriptures. Having arrived here, we dare not proceed without coming first to you to have our passports put in order."
The false king was very angry.
"What is this eastern land of yours?"
he said. "Do I pay tribute to it, that you should appear before me in this rude fashion without bowing down?
I have never had any dealings with your country."
"Our eastern land," said Monkey, "long ago set up a heavenly court and became a great power, whereas yours is a minor power, a mere frontier land. There is an old saying, the king of a great country is father and lord, the king of a lesser country is vassal and son. You admit that you have had no dealings with our country. How dare you contend that we ought to bow down?"
"Remove that uncivil priest,"
the king called to his officers of war. At this all the officers sprang forward, but Monkey made a magic pass and cried, "Halt!" The magic of the pass was such that these officers all suddenly remained rooted to the spot and could not stir. "Well, might it be said, the captain standing round the steps became like figures of wood. The generals on the royal dais were like figures of clay." Seeing that Monkey had brought his officers, civil and military, to a standstill, the false king leapt from his dragon couch and made as though to seize him.
"Good," said Monkey to himself, "that is just what I wanted. Even if his hand is made of iron, this cudgel of mine will make some pretty dents in it."
But just at this moment a star of rescue arrived. Who can this have been, you ask? It was no other than the Prince of Crow-Cock, who hastened forward and clutched at the false king's sleeve, and, kneeling before him, cried,
"Father and king, stay your anger." "Little son," asked the king, "why should you say this?"
"I must inform my father and king," said the prince. 3 years ago, I heard someone say that a priest had been sent from Tiang to get scriptures in India, and it is he who has now unexpectedly arrived in our country. If my father and king, yielding to the ferocity of his noble nature, now arrests and beheads this priest, I fear the news will one day reach the emperor of Tiang, who will be furiously angry. You must know that after Lai Shai Min had established this great dynasty of Tiang and united the whole land, his heart was still not content, and he has now begun to conquer faraway lands. If he hears that you have done harm to his favorite priest, he will raise his hosts and come to make war upon you. Our troops are few and our generals feeble. You will, when it is too late, be sorry indeed that you provoked him. If you were to follow your small son's advice, you would question these four priests and only punish such of them as are proved not to travel at the King of China's bidding. This was a stratagem of the prince's, for he feared that harm might come to Tripitaka, and therefore tried to check the king, not knowing that Monkey was ready to strike. The false king believed him, and standing in front of the dragon couch, he cried in a loud voice,
"Priest, how long ago did you leave China, and why were you sent to get scriptures?"
"My master," said Monkey haughtily, "is called Tripitaka, and is treated by the Emperor of China as his younger brother. The Emperor, in a vision, went to the realms of death, and on his return he ordered a great mass for all souls in torment. On this occasion my master recited so well, and showed such compassionate piety, that the goddess Kuan Yin chose him to go on a mission to the West. My master vowed that he would faithfully perform this task in return for his sovereign's bounties, and he was furnished by the emperor with credentials for the journey. He started in the 13th year of the emperor's reign, in the 9th month, 3 days before the full moon. After leaving China, he came first to the land of the two frontiers, where he picked up me, and made me his chief disciple. In the hamlet of the Keo family, on the borders of the country of Wu Tzu, he picked up a second disciple called Pigsy, and at the river of flowing sands, he picked up a third, whom we call Sandy. Finally, a few days ago, at the Temple of Treasure Wood, he found another recruit, the servant who is carrying the luggage."
The false king thought it unwise to ask any more questions about Tripitaka, but he turned savagely upon Monkey and addressed to him a crafty question.
"I can accept," he said, "that one priest set out from China and picked up three priests on the way, but your story about the fourth member of your party I altogether disbelieve. This servant is certainly someone whom you have kidnapped. What is his name? Has he a passport, or has he none? Bring him before me to make his deposition."
The true king shook with fright.
"Master," he whispered, "what am I to depose?"
"That's all right," said Monkey. "I'll make your deposition for you."
Dear Monkey, he stepped boldly forward and cried to the magician in a loud, clear voice,
"Your Majesty, this old man is dumb and rather hard of hearing. But it so happens that when he was young, he travelled in India, and knows the way there. I know all about his career and origins, and with your Majesty's permission, I will make a deposition on his behalf."
"Make haste," said the false king, "and furnish a true deposition, or you will get into trouble."
Monkey then recited as follows.
"The subject of this deposition is far advanced in years. He is deaf and dumb, and has fallen on evil days. His family for generations has lived in these parts, but 5 years ago disaster overtook his house. Heaven sent no rain. The people perished of drought. The Lord King and all his subjects fasted and did penance. They burned incense, purified themselves, and called upon the Lord of heaven, but in all the sky not a wisp of cloud appeared.
the hungry peasants, dropped by the roadside, when suddenly there came a Taoist magician from Chung Nan Mountains, a monster in human form. He called to the winds and summoned the rain, displaying god-like power, but soon after secretly destroyed this wretched man's life. In the flower garden he pushed him down into the crystal well, then set himself on the dragon throne, none knowing it was he. Luckily I came and achieved a great success. I raised him from the dead and restored him to life without hurt or harm. He earnestly begged to be admitted to our faith and act as carrier on the road and join with us in our quest and journey to the western land. The false king who now sits on the throne is that foul magician. He that now carries our load is Crocock's rightful king.
When the false king in the palace of Golden Bells heard these words, he was so startled that his heart fluttered like the heart of a small deer. Then clouds of shame suffused his face, and leaping to his feet, he was about to flee when he remembered that he was unarmed. Looking round, he saw a captain of the guard with a dagger at his waist, standing there, dumb and foolish as a result of Monkey's spell. The false king rushed at him and snatched the dagger, then leapt upon a cloud and disappeared into space.
Sandy burst into an exclamation of rage, and Pigsy loudly abused Monkey for his slowness.
"It's a pity you didn't look sharp and stop him," he said. "Now he has sailed off on a cloud, and we shall never be able to find him."
"Don't shout at me, brothers," said Monkey, laughing.
"Let us call to the prince to come and do reverence to his true father, and the queen to her husband."
Then, undoing by a magic pass the spell that he had put upon the officers, he told them to wake up and do homage to their lord, acknowledging him as their true king.
"Give me a few facts to go upon," he said, "and as soon as I have got things clear, I will go and look for him."
Dear Monkey, he instructed Pigsy and Sandy to take good care of the prince, king, ministers, and queen, and Tripitaka, but while he was speaking, he suddenly vanished from sight. He had already jumped up into the Empyrean and was peering round on every side, looking for the wizard. Presently, he saw that monster flying for his life towards the northeast. Monkey caught him up and shouted,
"Monster, where are you off to? Monkey has come!"
The wizard turned swiftly, drew his dagger, and cried,
"Monkey, you scamp! What has it got to do with you, whether I usurp someone else's throne? Why should you come calling me to account and letting out my secrets?"
"Ho, ho!" laughed Monkey. "You impudent rascal! Do you think I'm going to allow you to play the emperor? Knowing who I am, you would have done well to keep out of my way. Why did you bully my master, demanding depositions and what not? You must admit now that the deposition was not far from the truth. Stand your ground and take old Monkey's cudgel like a man!"
The wizard dodged and parried with a thrust of his dagger at Monkey's face. It was a fine fight. After several bouts, the magician could no longer stand up against Monkey, and suddenly turning, he fled back the way he'd come, leapt into the city, and slipped in among the officers who were assembled before the steps of the throne. Then, giving himself a shake, he changed into an absolute counterpart of Tripitaka, and stood beside him in front of the steps. Monkey rushed up and was about to strike what he supposed to be the wizard, when this Tripitaka said, "Disciple, do not strike. It is I." It was impossible to distinguish between them. "If I kill Tripitaka, who is a transformation of the wizard, then I shall have achieved a glorious success. But supposing, on the other hand, it turns out that I have killed the real Tripitaka, that would not be so good."
There was nothing for it but to stay his hand, and calling to Pigsy and Sandy, he asked,
"Which really is the wizard, and which is our master? Just point for me, and I will strike the one you point at."
"We were watching you going for one another up in the air," said Pigsy, "when suddenly we looked round and saw that there were two Tripitakas. We have no idea which is the real one."
When Monkey heard this, he made a single pass and recited a spell to summon the devas that protect the law,
the local deities and the spirits of the neighbouring hills, and told them of his predicament. The wizard thought it time to mount the clouds again, and began to make towards the door. Thinking that Tripitaka was clearing the ground for him, Monkey raised his cudgel, and had it not been for the deities he had summoned, he would have struck such a blow at his master as would have made mincemeat of 20 Tripitakas. But in the nick of time, the guardian deities stopped him, saying, "Great sage, the wizard is just going to mount the clouds again." Monkey rushed after him, and was just about to cut off his retreat, when the wizard turned round, slipped back again into the crowd, and was once more indistinguishable from the real Tripitaka. Much to Monkey's annoyance, Pigsy stood by, laughing at his discomfiture.
"You've nothing to laugh at, you hulking brute," he said. "This means you've got two masters to order you about. It's not going to do you much good."
"Brother," said Pigsy, "you call me a fool, but you're a worse fool than I. You can't recognise your own master, and it's a waste of effort to go on trying. But you would at least recognise your own headache, and if you ask our master to recite his spell, Sandy and I will stand by and listen. The one who doesn't know the spell will certainly be the wizard. Then all will be easy."
"Brother," said Monkey, "I am much obliged to you. There are only three people who know that spell. It sprouted from the heart of the Lord Buddha himself. It was handed down to the Bodhisattva Kuan Yin. It was then taught to our master by the Bodhisattva herself. No one else knows it. Good, then, master, recite."
The real Tripitaka at once began to recite the spell, while the wizard could do nothing but mumble senseless sounds.
"That's the wizard!" cried Pigsy. "He's only mumbling!"
And at the same time he raised his rake and was about to strike, when the wizard sprang into the air and ran up along the clouds. Dear Pigsy, with a loud cry, he set off in pursuit, and Sandy, leaving Tripitaka, hastened to the attack with his priest's staff. Tripitaka stopped reciting, and Monkey, released from his headache, seized his iron cudgel and sped through the air.
Hey, what a fight!
Three wild priests beleaguered one foul fiend. With rake and staff, Pigsy and Sandy assailed him from right and left.
"If I join in," said Monkey, "and attack him in front, I fear he is so frightened of me that he will run away again. Let me get into position above him and give him a real garlic-pounding blow that will finish him off for good and all."
He sprang up into the Empyrean and was about to deliver a tremendous blow when from a many-coloured cloud in the northeast there came a voice which said, "Monkey, stay your hand." Monkey looked round and saw it was the Bodhisattva Manjusri. He withdrew his cudgel and, coming forward, did obeisance, saying,
"Bodhisattva, where are you going to?"
"I come to take this monster off your hands," said Manjusri.
"I am sorry you should have trouble," said Monkey.
The Bodhisattva then drew from his sleeve a magic mirror that showed demons in their true form. Monkey called to the other two to come and look, and in the mirror they saw the wizard in his true shape. He was Manjusri's lion.
"Bodhisattva,"
said Monkey,
"this is the blue-maned lion that you sit upon. How comes it that it ran away and turned into an evil spirit? Can't you keep it under control?"
"It did not run away," said Manjusri. "It acted under orders from Buddha himself."
"You mean to tell me," said Monkey, "that it was Buddha who told this creature to turn into an evil spirit and seize the emperor's throne? In that case, all the troubles I meet with while escorting Tripitaka are very likely ordered by his holiness. A nice thought."
"Monkey," said Manjusri, "you don't understand. In the beginning, this king of Krokok was devoted to good works and the entertaining of priests. Buddha was so pleased that he sent me to fetch him away to the Western Paradise, where he was to assume a golden body and become an arhat. As it was not proper for me to show myself in my true form, I came disguised as a priest and begged for alms. Something I said gave him offence, and not knowing that I was anyone in particular, he had me bound and cast into the river, where I remained under water for 3 nights and 3 days, till at last a guardian spirit rescued me and brought me back to paradise.
I complained to Buddha, who sent this creature to throw the king into the well and let him remain there 3 years as a retaliation for the 3 days that I was in the river. You know the saying,
not a sip, not a sup.
But now you have arrived on the scene, the episode is successfully closed.
That is all very well, said Monkey. All these sips and sups may have enabled you to get even with your enemy, but what about all the unfortunate people whom this fiend has ruined?
He hasn't ruined anyone, said Manjusri. During the 3 years that he was on the throne, rain has fallen, crops have been good, and the people have been at perfect peace. How can you speak of his ruining people?
That may be, said Monkey, but how about all the ladies of the court who've been sleeping with him, and unwittingly been led into a heinous and unnatural offence? They would hardly subscribe to the view that he had done no harm.
He isn't in a position to defile anyone, said Manjusri. He's a gelded lion. At this, Pigsy came up to the wizard and felt him.
Quite true, he announced, laughing. This is a blotchy nose that never sniffed wine. A bad name and nothing to show for it.
Very well, then, said Monkey. Take him away. If you had not come just in time, he'd have been dead by now.
Manjusri then recited a spell and said, Creature, back to your true shape and look sharp about it. The wizard at once changed into his real lion form, and Manjusri, putting down the lotus that he carried in his hand, harnessed the lion, mounted him, and rode away over the clouds. If you do not know how Tripitaka and his disciples left the city, you must listen while it is explained to you in the next chapter. Monkey and the other two disciples lowered their clouds on which they rode and returned to court, where they received the humble thanks of the king, his ministers, heir and consort, and all the officers. Monkey told them how Manjusri had reclaimed the fiend, at which they prostrated themselves with extreme awe and reverence. In the midst of these congratulations and rejoicings, a eunuch suddenly arrived, saying,
My lord and master, 4 more priests have arrived.
Brother,
said Pixie in consternation,
what if it should turn out that the fiend, having disguised himself as Manjusri and taken us all in, has now turned himself into a priest in the hope of confounding us?
Impossible,
said Monkey, and he ordered them to be shown in. The officers of the court sent word that they were to be admitted, and when they appeared, Monkey saw at once that they were priests from the Treasure Wood Temple, bringing the crown, belt, cloak, and upturned shoes of the king.
Just at the right moment, said Monkey, delighted.
He then called to the porter to come forward, took off his head wrap and put on the crown, took off his cloth coat and put on the royal robe, undid the sash and girded him with the belt of jades, slipped off his priest's sandals and put on the upturned shoes. Then he told the prince to bring out the white jade tablet and put it in the king's hand, bidding him mount the dais and proclaim his sovereignty in accordance with the old saying, A court must not, even for a day, be without a sovereign. But the king was very loath to sit upon the throne, and weeping bitterly, he knelt on the centre of the steps, saying,
I was dead for 3 years, and having now, by your doing, been brought back to life, how can I dare proclaim myself your sovereign? It would be better that one of you priests should be king, and that I should take my wife and child and live like a commoner outside the walls of the city.
Tripitaka, of course, would not accept, as his heart was set upon going to worship the Buddha and get scriptures. The king then asked Monkey.
Gentlemen, said Monkey, laughing, I will not deceive you. If I had wanted to be an emperor, I could have had the throne in any of the 10,000 lands and 9 continents under heaven. But I have got used to being a priest and leading a lazy, comfortable existence. An emperor has to wear his hair long. At nightfall he may not doze. At the 5th drum he must be awake.
Each time there is news from the frontier, his heart jumps. When there are calamities and disasters, he is plunged in sorrow and despair. I should never get used to it. You go back to your job as emperor, and let me go back to mine as priest, doing my deeds and going upon my way.
Seeing that it was useless to refuse, the king at last mounted the dais, turned towards his subjects, and proclaimed his sovereignty, announcing a great amnesty throughout his realm. He loaded the priests from the Treasurewood Temple with presents and sent them home. Then he opened the eastern upper room and held a banquet for Tripitaka. He also sent for a painter to make portraits of the blessed countenances of Tripitaka and his disciples, which were to be hung in the Palace of Golden Bells and reverenced as objects of worship. Having put the king upon his throne, Tripitaka and his disciples were anxious to start out again as soon as possible. The king, his ladies, the prince, and all the ministers pressed upon them all the heirlooms of the kingdom, and gold, silver, silks, and satins, to show their deep gratitude, but Tripitaka would not accept so much as a split hair. And when their passports had been put in order, he urged Monkey and the rest to get the horse saddled, so that they might start at once. The king was very loath to part with them, ordered his state coach to be got ready, and made Tripitaka ride in it. He was drawn by officers, civil and military, while the prince and ladies of the court pushed at the sides till they were beyond the walls of the town. Here Tripitaka alighted and took leave of them all.
"Master," said the king, "on your way back from India, when you pass this way, you must certainly visit me."
"I shall obey your command," said Tripitaka.
Then, with his eyes full of tears, the king, accompanied by all his ministers, returned to the palace.
The master and his three disciples travelled westward, going slowly, the better to enjoy the scenery, when suddenly they heard what sounded like the hubbub of 100,000 voices. Tripitaka, much alarmed, reined in his horse and, turning to Monkey, said, "Where does that strange noise come from?"
"It sounds to me like a landslide," broke in Pigsy.
"I should say it was a thunderstorm," said Sandy.
"I'm certain it is men shouting and horses neighing," said Tripitaka.
"You're all wrong," laughed Monkey. "Wait while I go and have a look."
Dear Monkey, he gave himself a shake, sprang straight up into the clouds, and looked below. Below him he saw a moated city. The vapours that surrounded it were all of good omen. None were baleful. Monkey thought to himself, "Where can all that noise come from? I can see no banners or halberds, no artillery, yet certainly there is a din of horses and men."
While he was debating with himself, his eye fell upon a tall sandy cliff outside the city, near which were gathered together a great crowd of Buddhist priests dragging a cart, and to give themselves courage for the task, each time they hauled, they cried out all together the name of the Bodhisattva of Power. This was the noise that had alarmed Tripitaka. Lowering his cloud, Monkey saw that the cart was loaded with bricks, tiles, timber, earth, clods, and the like. The cliff was almost perpendicular, but a narrow path ran up between steep walls. How were they going to get the cart up this path defied imagination. It was a hot day, but they were all still clad in full monastic robes. Seeing them in this plight, Monkey could think of no better explanation than that they were building a temple, and unable to obtain labourers because the harvest was in progress, they had found nothing for it but to take on the work themselves. While he was thus speculating, the gates of the city opened, and two young Taoists came out. No sooner did the Buddhists see them than, in an evident agony of apprehension, they redoubled their efforts, tugging madly at the cart.
"Aha," said Monkey to himself, "now all is plain. The priests are afraid of those Taoists. I have heard it said that on the way to the west there is a place where Taoists are in power and Buddhism has been destroyed. This must be the place that was meant. However, if I go back at once and tell the master, he will say that this is all mere guesswork, and scold me for not bringing back a trustworthy report.
I will go down and find out all about it before I speak to the master. He gave himself a shake and changed into the guise of a wandering Taoist magician. On his left arm he carried a hamper, and in his right hand a tambourine, and singing Taoist songs as he went, he strolled towards the two Taoists. "Masters, I salute you most humbly," he said, bowing.
"Where do you come from?" they asked.
"Your disciple," said Monkey, "wanders through the world like a cloud. The four corners of the earth are his home. His purpose in coming here is to collect subscriptions for works of piety. In what quarters of this city of yours is the way loved? In what streets are the worthy esteemed? For I feel like going and begging a little supper."
"Sir," said the two Taoists, "we are surprised to hear you speak so humbly."
"What do you mean by humbly?" asked Monkey.
"Well, you spoke of begging for your supper," they said. "Is not that a humble way of talking?"
"That is how those who have left the world must get their bread," said Monkey, "or they have no money to buy it with."
"It is clear," they said, smiling, "that you have no knowledge of how things stand in these parts. In this city, not only do all the officials and officers love the way, and all rich merchants and tradesmen esteem its adepts, so that there is not a man or woman, young or old, who does not bow down before us and ask to be allowed to supply our needs. That would be a small thing, hardly worth mentioning. What is singular in this country is that the king himself is a devout supporter of Taoism." "I am young," said Monkey, "and come from far away. It is natural that I should know nothing of this. I must trouble you to tell me the name of this country, and how it comes about that the king is such a lover of the way, that I may know just how things stand with my fellow Taoists in this country."
"This country," they said, "is called Cart Slow, and the king is our kinsman."
"He is, I suppose, a Taoist priest who became king," said Monkey.
"No," they said. 20 years ago, there was a famine here. The whole court and all the people purified themselves and prayed fervently for rain. Their prayers were not answered. But just when all seemed lost, 3 immortals suddenly came down from the sky and saved us. Today, they are our masters and we are their disciples."
"What are their names?" asked Monkey.
"Their leader," said the Taoists, "is called the Tiger Strength Immortal, and the 2 others are called Deer Strength Immortal and Ram Strength Immortal."
"And what powers of magic have they?"
asked Monkey.
"They can summon the wind or bring rain," said the Taoists, "by a mere turn of the hand. They can point at water, and it becomes oil. Prick stones, and they become gold, as easily as one turns in bed. Small wonder, then, that the king and his ministers fell down before them and are eager to count us Taoists as their kin."
"Your king is a lucky man," said Monkey.
"And if your masters have such arts, there must be few who would be sorry to claim kinship with them. Indeed, if it isn't making too bold, I should take it as a great kindness if I might be allowed to meet them for a moment myself."
"There is no difficulty about that," they said.
"We too are the most favoured and trusted of all their disciples. Moreover, such is their love of Taoism that they have only to hear the word mentioned, and they immediately come out overflowing with welcome. If we were to introduce you, the thing would be as easy as blowing ashes from a tray."
"Bravo!" cried Monkey. "Let us go to them at once."
"You must wait a few minutes," they said. "We have some business to attend to."
"I don't quite understand," said Monkey.
"Those who have left the world are bound by no ties. How can you speak of having business to conduct?"
"Those people over there," they said, pointing to the priests by the cliff, "are working for us. We have to go and check them off by the list, in case some should be playing truant."
You must be mistaken, said Monkey. Those are Buddhists, but they are priests just as we are. What right have we to set them to work or check them off on a list?
You do not understand, said the Taoist. At the time of the great drought, the Buddhists prayed to Buddha and the Taoists to the pole star. The Buddhists had no success at all. In vain they prayed, in vain they recited their scriptures, but in the nick of time our masters appeared, and at once rain fell, and the suppliant crowds were saved. Our masters then demanded that as the Buddhists had proved themselves to be impostors, their temples and images should be destroyed, and their passports taken away from them, so that they might not flee to their homes. They were then given to us, to work for us as slaves. It is they who light our fires, they who sweep our floors, they who are the porters at our gate. At the back of our temple there is a building which is not yet finished, so we set them to bring tiles and bricks and logs up the cliff. It was feared they might be shirking their work or not pulling hard enough at the cart, so we too were sent to see what was happening.
This is all most unfortunate, said Monkey, bursting into tears.
It is quite impossible for me to meet your masters.
How is that? They asked.
I must tell you, said Monkey, that the purpose of my wanderings is in part to discover a lost relation.
What relation? They asked. I have an uncle, said Monkey, who when he was young became a Buddhist priest. During the famine, he went to distant parts to beg alms and has not been seen since. It is very possible that he is detained here and cannot get home. I cannot go with you to the city till I have found out whether he is here.
That can easily be done, they said. We'll sit here, and you can go to the cliff and do our business for us. There are 500 names on that list. You have only to check over the list and see that they are all there. If you find your uncle among them, in consideration of the fact that you are a Taoist yourself, we should gladly release him. Then we would take you to the city.
Monkey thanked them heartily and set out towards the cliff, beating his drum as he went. When he reached them, the priests flung themselves to their knees and, beating their heads upon the ground, cried out,
"Spare us, Father, there is not one among us that has been idle, nor of all the 500 is there any that has absented himself or failed to haul the cart."
"Aha," thought Monkey to himself, "these priests are clearly used to being roughly handled. If they cringe like this to me, I think they must pretty well die of fright when their real masters go near them." He motioned them to rise, saying,
"You have nothing to be afraid of. I am not here to see that you do your work. I have come to look for a lost kinsman."
On hearing this, they all pressed round, each stretching out his head with upturned face, hoping that he might be claimed as kin.
"Which of us is it?" they asked.
After having looked attentively at each of them, Monkey burst out laughing.
"It seems you have not found your relative," they said. "Why, then, are you laughing?"
"I am laughing," said Monkey, "to think what a strange notion you have of the duties of your order. Having been born under an unlucky star, you quarrelled with your parents, or some such thing, and were disowned by them and sent to be priests. One would have thought that you would then at least have devoted yourself to reading scriptures and other holy works. How is it that instead I find you hiring yourselves out to Taoists and working as their servants?"
"Why have you come to mock us?" they cried. "But you are evidently a stranger and perhaps do not know of our plight."
"That is the case," said Monkey.
"The king of this country," they said, "has turned his heart away from the true law and gives his favour to these heretical masters and their crew."
"How came that about?"
asked Monkey.
"The three immortals," they said, "having obtained the king's confidence by bringing rain, persuaded him to destroy us. All our temples were pulled down, our passports taken away so that we could not return to our homes,
nor were we allowed to labour for our own support, but were given over to the immortals as their drudges and bondsmen. The moment any Taoist itinerant magic-maker sets foot in the town, he is sent for by the king and loaded with presents, whereas if a Buddhist comes, whether from far or near, he is seized and given to the immortals as a labourer.
These Taoists, said Monkey, must certainly possess more than the common arts, or they would never have found their way to the king's heart. After all, summoning the wind and bringing rain are common trumpery practices, such as would not move a monarch's heart.
True enough, they said.
These immortals can also make the philosopher's stone go into trances, turn water into oil, and stones into gold.
And now they have built a temple dedicated to the Taoist Trinity, where all day and all night they read scriptures and perform rites to preserve the king's youth. And this, no doubt, gratifies his majesty.
Things being as they are, said Monkey, I can't imagine why you do not simply run away.
Father, they said, how can we run away? The immortals have persuaded the king to have portraits of us painted, which are hung up in every part of the land. There is not a hamlet in the whole kingdom that has not got copies of these pictures inscribed at the top in the king's own hand. Any official who catches a Buddhist priest is at once promoted 3 stages, and a private person is given a reward of 50 weights of silver. We should never succeed in escaping. Why, not to speak of priests, anyone with his hair cut a bit short or a little thin on top would as likely as not be grabbed. The whole land swarms with police and detectives. Judge for yourself what chance anyone would have of getting clear. We have no choice but to stay here and bear our sufferings.
I wonder you are alive to tell the tale,
said Monkey.
Father, they cried, many have died. The priests who belonged to this place, together with those who were arrested in various parts of the kingdom, were about 2,000 in all. Of these, some 600 or 700 died of exhaustion or exposure to heat or cold or through lack of food, and 700 or 800 took their own lives. The 500 whom you see here are those who failed to die.
What do you mean by failed to die? Asked Monkey.
The rope broke, they said, or the blade was blunt, or the poison did not work, or the backwash carried them to the surface of the water and they did not drown.
Lucky fellows, said Monkey. Heaven has blessed you with long life.
Say rather, cursed us with eternal torment, they cried. What do you suppose they give us to feed on? Water that the cheapest rice has been cooked in 3 times a day. And where do we sleep? Here in the open, at the foot of this cliff. But the moment we close our eyes, spirits come to watch over us.
Quite so, said Monkey. You have nightmares as the result of all your sufferings.
That is not so at all, they said. The 6 guardians and the defenders of religion come to watch over us, and if any of us is at the point of death, they revive him.
More fools they, said Monkey. They ought to let you die and go to heaven as quickly as possible.
They tell us in our dreams, the Buddhist said, that we must hold out a little longer despite our torments, for soon, they said, a pilgrim will come who is on his way to India to get scriptures. With him is a disciple named the Great Sage, Equal of Heaven, who has great magic powers which he uses to right the wrongs of the oppressed. He will destroy the Taoists and bring the followers of Zen once more into respect.
Monkey smiled to himself.
That makes me feel really quite important, he said to himself.
Fancy having spirits announcing one's arrival beforehand.
He turned his heel on them, and beating his drum, strode on towards the city gate.
Did you find your kinsmen? The 2 Taoists asked.
They are all my kinsmen, said Monkey.
What? The whole 500?
He asked.
200 on my father's side, 200 on my mother's, and the rest are my bond brothers, said Monkey. If you will release the whole lot of them, I'll go back with you.
You must be mad, they said.
These Buddhists were given to us by our king to be our slaves. We might, to oblige you, release one or two of them, but we should have to manage it by first sending in a report that they were ill, and then another that they had died. We can't suddenly release the whole gang. These things are looked into. Why, the king himself might take it into his head to come and see how the work is going.
So you won't let them go, cried Monkey. Very well, then.
And taking his cudgel from behind his ear, he rushed at them and gave each such a blow upon the head that their brains gushed out and they fell dead where they had stood.
Oh, what have you done?
Cried the Buddhists, leaving their carts and rushing up to Monkey in utter consternation.
You have killed the king's favourites.
Why so?
Said Monkey. These terrorists, they said, are always at the king's side, and in the presence of all the court he humbles himself before them. These two, whom you have slain, were sent to supervise our work. It will at once be said that it was we who killed them. You must come with us to the city immediately and confess your crime.
Enough of all this noise, said Monkey.
I am not the mendicant that I appear. It is I who am your saviour.
You, a murderer,
they cried,
who have added immeasurably to our burdens by your deed of violence. You,
our saviour? I am the great sage of whom you spoke,
said Monkey,
and have come to rescue you.
It's not true, they said. We should recognize him.
You have never seen him,
said Monkey.
How could you recognize him?
An old man, they said, often comes to us in our dreams, telling us that he was the spirit of the planet Venus. He gave us such a complete description of the great sage that we could not fail to recognize him. Flat forehead, bright steely eyes, a round head, hairy cheeks, and no chin.
The old scamp,
said Monkey, secretly flattered that spirits should have prepared the way for him.
You are perfectly right,
he said suddenly.
I am not the Monkey Sage. I am only one of his disciples. There goes Monkey.
The Buddhists turned in the direction to which he pointed, and while their backs were turned, Monkey resumed his true form. Turning round, they at once recognized him, and flinging themselves upon their knees,
Father, they cried, forgive us, for we did not know you in disguise. We beg of you to come with us at once to the city, put down the impostors, and give the right its due.
Follow me,
cried Monkey, and they pressed about him on either side. They came first to the cliff, where Monkey, using his magic power, hauled the carts to the top and tilted them over the edge so that they crashed to the bottom into a thousand pieces.
Now go your ways, he said to the Buddhists, and let not one of you show that he has any connection with me. Tomorrow I will go to the king and compass the Taoists' undoing.
Father, they said, we dare not stir from here, or the magistrates will lay hands on us again, and we shall have been ransomed only to fall into fresh trouble.
I will give you a magic that will keep you safe,
said Monkey. Dear Monkey, he plucked out a handful of his hairs, chewed them into small pieces, and gave a piece to each Buddhist, saying,
put it under the nail of your thumb and clench your fist. Then you can go where you will, and no one will dare touch you. You have only to press your thumb into the palm of your hand and cry, great sage, and I will come at once to help you.
But, Father, they said, suppose we were a long way off and you could not hear us. What then?
That is all right, said Monkey. If I were 10,000 leagues away, it would make no difference. You would still come to no harm.
Some of the bolder among them experimented, murmuring, great sage, while they pressed their thumbs. At once, a thunder god, armed with an iron cudgel, hovered before the face of each, ready to protect him against a whole army of attackers.
Father, a marvelous manifestation, they cried.
When the danger is past, said Monkey, you have only to cry, quiet, and the apparition will vanish.
And sure enough, when they cried, quiet, the thunder gods changed back into hares and returned to their place under the thumbnail. The Buddhists now began to disperse.
"Don't go too far away,"
cried Monkey.
"Look out for news of me in the city, and as soon as a summons to Buddhists is sent out, come and give me back my hairs."
Meanwhile, Tripitaka, waiting at the roadside, was wondering what had become of Monkey. At last he ordered Pigsy to lead the horse, and was just setting out towards the west, when they met a number of Buddhist priests, scattering in every direction. Presently, near the city gates, they met Monkey himself, still accompanied by a few priests who had stayed behind.
"Monkey," cried Tripitaka, "I sent you to discover the cause of that strange noise. Why were you so long about it?"
Monkey brought the priests to Tripitaka and made them do reverence to him. Then he told what had happened.
"And what am I to do?"
asked Tripitaka. "Our temple," the priest said, "has not been destroyed. That is because it contains an image of the king's ancestor, having been built by his order. We invite you to come and rest there till the great sage has done his work."